Welcome to the most enchanted podcast in all the realms.
I'm Lynn.
I'm Elisa.
And I'm Chell.
Together, we are
the Narrators 3.
And this is Once Upon a Rewatch,
where all plot devices come with a price.
Welcome to Once Upon a Rewatch, Season 4, Episode 15, Poor Unfortunate Soul. The original air date for this episode was March 22nd, 2015. The writers for this episode were Andrew Chambliss and Dana Horgan. The director was Steve Perlman. And the title card is Ursula. We begin in the past on the ocean between the Enchanted Forest and Neverland.
The pops of red in this opening scene looked so nice. Like Smee's hat and some other like various accents on the pirate just looked really nice with all the blue. I was like, ooh, the color coding in this scene is really pretty.
Hook and his crew hear a mermaid song, distracting them in a daze until they almost strike a series of rocks, which they narrowly miss.
So when Lynn and me were watching this episode and Hook mentioned Pan, I literally was just like, I miss Pan, because I do.
I do too. Peter Pan, come and get your son. He's fucking everything up again.
Yeah, pick up your son.
Pick up your son.
He can't play well with the other boys at school.
No, homeschool him.
Yeah.
As the Jolly Roger makes its escape, a lone mermaid watches in the distance. Her father, Poseidon, King of the Sea, scolds his daughter for ending the song just in time for the Jolly Roger to escape. His daughter proclaims that she wishes to use her voice to make people happy, not to hurt them. This is what her deceased mother would have wanted, as she, too, enjoyed singing. Poseidon argues that his wife would not want their daughter to allow her murderers to sail free. His daughter argues that just because one human hurt her mother does not condemn all of the human race. Poseidon does the universal mad dad line, as long as you live in my ocean, you live by my rules. His daughter, now revealed to be a young Ursula, says she no longer wishes to live in his ocean. So, basically, they're just ripping off the Broadway Little Mermaid plot. Okay.
Yeah, it basically is the Ariel plot from the Broadway version, at least the backstory. Because her mother loved humans and was killed by a bad one. And that is why Triton was so anti-human in the musical. I think it's a similar plot as well to the direct-to-video Little Mermaid prequel. I think it's called Ariel's Beginnings. But I can't be positive because I've never actually watched that one. But I did hear about the plot from my niece. So I think it's the same as the background established in the Broadway version. Also, Triton is one of Poseidon's children in mythology, right? So that would make King Triton and Ursula siblings, and Ursula, Ariel's aunt, which is also the plot in the Broadway musical. Obvious inspiration aside, I do think this was a really interesting backstory for Ursula. It worked for me.
Yeah, I was unaware of the stage show plot, but it did seem very Little Mermaid ripoff-y to me. Like, I was just like, I was having actually deja vu to like Maleficent's story. Like, there's so many similarities to the original story, but it's like twisted to fit the villains in a different way. You know, I don't know.
It reminded me of that too, but I think that twist worked for me better in this episode than it did in the Maleficent one.
Yes, I do. I think that as well. This one's a lot more seamless, also because it's consistent. And they already pre-established Ariel's backstory, and Ariel actually had she never met the original Ursula. So it totally fits better with this one.
It's interesting that, you know, the scene is Hook traveling between Neverland and the Enchanted Forest, and that the mermaids can travel the realm. And it kind of puts in perspective the opening of season 3, when there's the mermaid who they capture, and then, you know, she's aggressive, obviously, because they captured her. And it all actually fits nicely with Poseidon, you know, turning the mermaids against the humans after the death of his wife. And like Ariel, who's like an enchanted forest mermaid, friends with Snow White. She loves her human prince, but like Poseidon is against the humans. And so, you know, he's sending out his kingdom of mermaids to like attack stuff. And continuity, it's actually there in this time.
Oh, when Poseidon argues, right, that like, but your mother wouldn't want to allow her murderers to sail free. I initially thought when he said that, I was like, oh my God. Did Hook kill her mother? Like, that's where I, because that was like that seemed like the implication with that line alone. And then, of course, you know, she says like, oh, it doesn't condemn all of the human race. And I was like, oh, okay, okay, no. but like that line initially, I was like, oh my God, where are we going with this?
Yeah, well, that would have been dark.
Hook, what did you do?
Yes.
We flash forward to modern day Storybrooke at Gold's cabin, where he, Regina, Maleficent, Cruella, and Ursula start interrogating August about the author. Under threat of death by fireball, and I have to add, I'm not sure I've ever been more attracted to Regina than I was when she was threatening to set August on fire.
That really doesn't surprise me.
August confesses that while in Hong Kong, he stole the research of the freshly murdered mystic we met in season 2 called the Dragon. August alleges that the research is still currently in Storybrooke. Gold heads to August's trailer to get the research.
Why didn't they just look there to begin with?
Because they're idiots. The baddies are still keeping secrets from Regina, however, and she subtly uses her magic to send a spell to the charming swans and Hook, who are still searching for the mayor. The spell briefly possesses Mary Margaret, i.e. the spell literally goes into her boobs and it's super weird.
It is.
She is able to tell them that Pinocchio is currently August, but Gold is back and withholding his true plans from her. Regina then releases Mary Margaret.
Possession weirdness aside, I am very proud of Regina for taking the risk to get the hero's important info. Like, look how far she's come.
I'm so proud of her. I'm sure it won't last. Nothing good ever does in this show.
They quickly head to the pawn shop to bring Belle up to speed. She's befuddled by the news and tells them that she gave the dagger to Killian. Emma quickly deduces that Gold transformed himself into Hook to retrieve it.
Poor Belle. The devastation on her face when she realizes Gold has manipulated her again. It hurt my heart. She does not deserve this.
She and Will need to leave Storybrooke and go on a cruise or something. Like, she wanted to be an adventurer. Why stick around in this one-horse town anyway?
Seriously. As far as I know, she wants adventure in the great wide somewhere. She wants it more than she can tell.
Right? It's like, just fucking lock the pawn shop up, throw away the key or whatever, or give it to Emma and just be like, you know what? I'm packing my bags. I'm going off with my cute new boyfriend. We are going to go on a Disney cruise. Goodbye.
Exactly.
David says that Gold has to wait as they need to rescue August first, which no, you really don't. Just leave him.
Yeah, I initially wrote, David just had the dumbest idea ever and decided to voice it to the rest of them.
I was so disappointed in him. Killian has decided to take it upon himself to uncover what Gold's master plan is by returning the happy ending he once stole from Ursula. Meanwhile, at the cabin, Regina shows August the illustration of the storybook page featuring her and Robin Hood. August reveals that while Pinocchio does not recall being August, he does recall being Pinocchio. And he remembers Robin Hood, and I am so upset that we have to deal with this smarmy bastard again. I just needed to put that out there.
I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry.
I hate him, babe. I hate him so much. I wish him a very shit his pants and die every time I have to see him. I hate
flames.
Him.
So flames.
Much. Flames on the side of my face. Regina wants details on how this page could have appeared, and she suspects August knows more than he is saying. Ursula abruptly gets up from her perch by the window and heads out, saying she needs to stretch her tentacles. I just please don't want any more tentacle stuff.
There's going to be at least 3 more tentacle references in this episode.
I cringed every time I wrote it, knowing poor Lynn had to read it. I'm sorry, Lynn. There was no way around it.
It's just so gross.
Yeah.
Like, this is a family show. In reality, she hears the conch being blown by Hook deep in the forest. Ursula comes up behind him and ensnares him, only releasing him after he reveals that she does not need Gold or the author to get what she wants. In exchange for whatever it is Hook is keeping, he wants to know Gold's plan, and Ursula agrees. We return to the enchanted forest of the past, where a human Ursula is singing Fathoms Below in a tavern. It's worth knowing that her outfit in this scene is so good I would stab someone for it.
It's beautiful. Also, young Ursula herself was ethereal. I really liked her.
Tiffany Boone, her actress, is stunning. Go image search stills for her in Hunters, which is like the latest show she's done. She has this gorgeous 1970s afro. Like, she looks like Foxy Brown, also with like these gorgeous big doe eyes. Because now she has short hair. which really, really make her eyes pop. Like, ugh, stunning.
She has some serious Disney princess eyes.
Very.
Hook recognizes the tune as the one which attempted to lure his crew to their deaths. He offers her a drink and thanks for sparing them. Over drinks, Ursula explains to Hook that her father kicked her out of his kingdom for disobeying him, so she stole a magical bracelet that allowed her to walk on land. Ursula also reveals that her mother was killed by a pirate, which is why Poseidon demands Ursula use her voice, the only thing that reminds her of her mother, to steer ships awry. Hook tells Ursula that listening to her voice was the only thing that has ever taken away his lifelong pain. She shares her plan to sing in Glowerhaven, a favorite destination of her mother's, and Hook offers to take her there on his ship. He asks her to meet him first thing in the morning.
I know it doesn't end great, but I thought here the start of their little friendship was very cute.
I did too. It actually surprised me. Like, I thought he was going to be scummy from the jump, you know?
Yeah, but he's not.
No, not at all.
We flash forward to the present Storybrook docks where Hook and Ursula stand overlooking the ocean. When Ursula asks Hook where her item is, he responds that it is located inside the Jolly Roger back in the Enchanted Forest. Ursula is able to use her magic to open a portal to the Jolly Roger, which has been turned into a model ship in a bottle. In the past, Hook is ambushed outside of the tavern and taken prisoner aboard his own ship by Poseidon. The Sea King instructs Hook to remove Ursula's ability to sing by using a magical seashell which will strip Ursula of her singing voice. Poseidon believes that Ursula will return to the sea.
Man, Poseidon sucks.
Initially, Captain Hook is adamant about refusing Poseidon's order as a matter of honor to Ursula. However, Poseidon knows Killian's weakness, his desire for revenge. The Sea King offers Hook a vial of squid ink, which has the power to incapacitate Rumpelstiltskin. We flash forward to the pawn shop where Hook and Ursula enlist the help of Will Scarlet. Belle wants him to prove that she's actually talking to Killian. He replies he and Will are now both aligned, trying to get rid of the Dark One. He shows the bottled ship to Will, asking if any of his Wonderland tricks and knowledge can assist. Will is confident he has exactly what they need. And of course he does, because he's perfect.
I'm so delighted every time Will shows up.
I love that they go to the young English ruffian for the magic shrooms. Like, I half expected him to just have a little baggie in his hand and go snoochie-boochies, you know, because, you know, magic shrooms.
Yeah.
Elsewhere. Regina is walking in the woods, staring at the alternate book art, when Robin Hood appears ahead and calls to her. They embrace and kiss, and I hate it. Regina wonders how he returned, which Robin dismisses before they are charged at by the evil queen version of Regina, who shoots a fireball at herself. Regina abruptly wakes up, realizing it was a nightmare.
Regina's dream about Robin Hood wasn't originally in the script. They added it because the network wanted to make sure that viewers knew that, like, Robin could come back at some time. I do actually wish he was here right now in Storybrooke instead of where he is with the plot he is currently with, which I'll be very vague about, no spoilers. But the plot that is happening to him right now off screen is awful, and I hate it. And he may have screwed up, but he certainly doesn't deserve what's happening to him right now. So I wish he was just here smooching.
Gold returns from August's trailer, except not really, as he is confident August lied to them and would never have cracked so easily. Instead, Gold paid a visit to the fairies' ample supply of magic. He stole a temporary painful potion that turns August back into wood, a truly horrifying sight no human should have to look on. But, like, listen, Rumple, I hate you, but if you kill off August for good, I'll consider us even.
Facts.
Meanwhile, Emma and her parents park the truck and head out on foot the rest of the way through the woods towards Gold's cabin. Emma makes a remark about understanding Killian's desire to slay Rumpelstiltskin with the dagger, which concerns her parents. Back at the CGI horror puppet show in the cabin, the spell causes August's nose to grow every time he lies, because Once Upon a Time is back in her body horror era.
It was such a nightmare special effect. Also, I read on the Wikipedia that the cabin scenes took like multiple days to shoot, and Eowyn was like tied up the whole time. So he actually had rope burns on his hands by the end of shooting. So I feel bad for the poor guy. And also the fire that he was tortured over was also real fire. So like, they really put him through the ringer.
You know, I blame Ian Bailey's agent for not lining up enough work for him so August could never, ever make an appearance on this show again. This is your fault, Mr. Agent.
I hate it here, and I wish I was doing a horror podcast instead. This should have been an episode about Ringu and Ju-on.
Darkwater. Gold adds extra incentive as he holds August's nose to the fire during his interrogation. August confesses that the sorcerer trapped the author behind a door, but he does not know where the door is, except that it is in Storybrooke and that Regina has seen it before in one of the pages. Gold, Regina, and Maleficent head to the sorcerer's mansion to look for the door. At the docks, Hook and Ursula successfully restore the Jolly Roger by using liquid distilled from Wonderland's mushrooms.
I think some psychedelic music should have started playing when they uncorked the vial containing the shroom magic. Just saying.
I'm Chell, and I've been leaving my window open since I was 11 years old in the hopes I would be given the dark gift. You can find me blasting the bodacious soundtrack to The Lost Boys and laughing at memes taking a bite out of the Vampire Chronicles.
I'm Tori, and I've been hoping to run into a vampire since I was 12. But like, one I can befriend, not one who will kill me. You can find me reading almost any book with a vampire in it and being angry about the final seasons of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Vampires have ruined our lives. That's why we're making a podcast about it.
Our podcast discusses vampire books, movies, TV shows, tropes, folklore, and more. If it's about the fanged undead, we want to talk about it. So tune in to Vampires Ruin My Life, available wherever you find podcasts.
In the past, Hook has Mr. Smee clear the deck so he can talk alone with Ursula. Hook tells Ursula about her father's plan. Although he refuses to break his personal code, Hook asks Ursula to steal the squid ink from her father's storage. The Sea Princess agrees.
Once again, we know how this ends, but I was proud of him for at least trying not to betray her and return her kindness.
Yeah.
Flash forward to the Jolly Roger, the present. Killian uses the connector part of his hook to unlock a safe where he extracts the magic shell containing Ursula's singing voice. He reminds her of their deal, to which she agrees. Her voice is set free, oddly using the same tune used for Ariel in the animated film, but is not restored. Ursula does not believe villains can achieve their happy endings without the author after all, and breaks her deal with Hook, knocking him out when he pulls a gun on her and chucks him unconscious into the ocean. As Ursula leaves, Ariel saves Hook and brings him back on board his ship. Oh, hey, Ariel's back.
Welcome back. Good to see you. Hope you've been well.
Want to start a detective agency with Belle? She's a free agent now.
I wish they did that.
Do you want to start a detective agency? No, that doesn't have a good ring to it. No, doesn't work.
No. Once he comes to, Ariel slaps him for tossing Blackbeard overboard before revealing where Eric was. She was forced to rescue Blackbeard for that information. After he began terrorizing people, Elsa was able to encapsulate the Jolly Roger into a bottle, which Ariel accidentally got swept up in.
I think it's very funny that Elsa was like, "You tried to drown my sister and my brother-in-law, future brother-in-law. So, you know, I'm just going to bottle your entire ship." Good for her. Sorry for poor Ariel getting stuck in it, though.
He explains his dilemma with Ursula and says he will need Ariel's help. Back in the past, it is nightfall and Ursula has returned with the squid ink. Except Poseidon ambushes them, having followed his daughter. In return for Hook refusing to comply with him, the Sea King takes away his only chance to seek revenge on Rumpelstiltskin. Hook then counters by stealing Ursula's singing voice to hurt Poseidon. Betrayed, Ursula dives back into the ocean. Hook threatens to crush the magic shell, forcing Poseidon to leave his ship.
This was awful, and it's like, of course Killian did finally betray her when there was no other option to get the squid ink, because at that point in time, he was hell-bent on avenging Mila and was making all sorts of bad choices because of it. So, like, we all saw this coming, but it still stung.
Mm-hmm.
Poor Ursula.
At the cabin, Cruella is watching over August when Emma bursts in, ready to rescue him. Cruella raises a gun to her, but gets knocked out by a skillet to the back of the head, thanks to a fast-acting Mary Margaret. Frying pans, who knew?
I loved Mary Margaret pulling her best Rapunzel in this moment.
It truly shocked me. Like, I was like, oh, damn. And then I just started howling with laughter.
It was so good.
It was good.
Ursula busts in on the heroes mid-rescue, quickly wrapping a tentacle around Mary Margaret to subdue Emma and David. And I hated reading that.
I'm sorry.
Any hoodle. Back in the Ocean Kingdom of the past, the rift between father and daughter continues, prompting an enraged Ursula to snap and use Poseidon's trident to transform herself into the powerful sea goddess for which Ursula was named after, only stronger and more powerful than her father.
Ursula is just like, if I can't be the best, I sure as hell am going to be the worst.
Good for her.
Flash forward to the present. The gang is surprised by Hook, who tells Ursula that only the person who enchanted the shell can reverse it. Poseidon appears, having been brought through a portal by Ariel. Poseidon apologizes to his daughter for everything and returns her singing voice so that he can hear the voice of his wife one last time. Poseidon turns to leave his daughter in peace, but she wishes to reconcile with her father at home. The heroes realize Cruella has escaped and it is only a matter of time before Gold and his cohorts are notified.
There's also a moment in the scene where Emma says she is happy to see her friend again to August. And I thought that was pretty funny because Emma was like consistently uncomfy throughout the last two seasons with the fact that August de-aged into a little boy. Like, it's like the one piece of magic here that she has not been able to roll with. So it was very funny that she was like, oh, thank God you're back to normal.
Meanwhile, everyone else is like, ugh, we prefer the ginger kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, God, for real. After the others leave the cabin, Hook stays behind, pensive and worried. Killian is mortified that his vengeance against Gold consumed him once more, reminding him that he was once a villain, sure to be robbed of his happy ending. He reveals to Emma that his happy ending is to be with her.
Well, they were smooching. I was really worried Gold was going to return to the cabin and, like, attack them. Because, like, I remember this episode, but I didn't remember how, like, it ended there. And I was like, oh, God, they're in danger.
It's okay. He doesn't walk that fast.
Stop smooching. You gotta get out of here, man.
Concurrently, Cruella drives up as Gold and the others are storming away from the Sorcerer's Mansion, having searched it in vain. Cruella reveals that August was rescued thanks to the mole, Ursula, much to Regina's relief. Elsewhere, Ursula reveals Gold's plans to Hook. As long as Emma is in Storybrooke to give everyone their happy endings, the author will be unable to give villains theirs. And the only way to change that is for Gold to fill Emma's heart with darkness.
Of course it is.
Because we haven't done that plot a million times with insert other character name here.
Mm. At least I'm very happy for Ursula. And I'm happy that she's just like, yeah, fuck Gold shit up for me. I'm cool. I'm just going to go back to living my best sea deity life. Because it was actually really sad earlier in this episode when she was like, I've never gone back in the ocean since I was banished here. So
yeah.
I wish her a lot of good swimming.
Meanwhile, Regina meets Emma at the loft, relieved to see August resting and Henry peacefully guarding him, which is a mystery to me, but whatever. She then tells Emma about her dream, insisting that the evil queen wanted to protect Robin, not hurt him. She then asks Emma if she can help track down Robin Hood using her skills as a Bales Bond woman. Emma agrees.
I do have a lot of feelings about Regina trusting Emma enough to reach out and ask for help, though. Like, I love these two so much.
Henry has two moms.
Henry has two moms.
August wakes up and confesses the author's door is not the Sorcerer's Mansion. He holds up the picture of the door, saying it is not just an illustration, but is the door itself. The author is actually trapped inside the Once Upon a Time book. That's it. It's over. So, this episode is mostly fine. It has a lot of August in it, and I hate him, so that spoiled it a bit. But he also gets the tar kicked out of him, so I liked that. I more or less liked the flashback portions, even if I did think it was lazy that they just repackaged the Broadway Little Mermaid plot. But young Ursula is really cute. And it was kind of a nice callback to the original film to have her song she keeps singing be Fathoms Below.
Yeah, I really like that too. It was pretty. Because Fathoms Below slaps. That song
yeah,
slaps.
Yeah, but if you say it's the best song in The Little Mermaid again, I'm going to go insane.
In the moment I said that, I forgot poor unfortunate souls existed.
I can't deal with that knowledge either.
Well, it was just because it's on another plane, you know? It's just that good. I didn't even think to compare it. I was just like comparing Fathoms Below with like Kiss the Girl and Under the Sea.
I have a question. I'm sure you both noticed. What were your feelings on when the note used to both capture and release Ursula's voice was the same melody that's used in The Little Mermaid as Ariel's voice?
Okay, so I thought it was lazy.
Okay, I did too. Yeah, I actually had notes in it, and I thought I kept that in, and I guess I didn't.
I was like,
that's Ariel's.
Plus, like, yeah, it's such a simple melody that, like, they couldn't be asked to have just come up with, like, another note progression to use for Ursula.
Yeah.
Just have it be her singing Fathoms Below. Like, Fathoms Below, I thought that was a nice reference, especially since the way it's set up in The Little Mermaid is, like, this is a sea shanty. This is the folk song.
Yeah.
I thought that alone by itself was a nice reference.
Yeah.
Using Ariel's tune, then it just became lazy. It just became, we can't be asked. We're just going to pull stuff from the original movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That really didn't work for me.
So I really enjoyed the Ursula flashbacks. I was invested. I thought it was a compelling backstory for her. I thought Killian's, Ursula's, and Poseidon's motivations were all very understandable. And while I was disappointed to see Killian betray Ursula, like, we as the audience understand where he's coming from. We understand who he is at that time. So it wasn't surprising. He had a chance to uphold his code, and he was going to. But then when his chance for revenge was threatened, he hurt someone who was kind to him and trusted him. And I felt like it was very consistent writing for a flashback Killian. So good on you, writers. It all made a lot of sense to me. I wish we had a little more of the Ursula plot in the present day storyline, because that part of the episode felt a little rushed to me. Like they were trying to move too many plots along in the present day storyline at once. But I still enjoyed it. It was nice to see Ariel again. Both of Ursula's actresses, I think, did a really great job. Both had moments where they really tugged on my heartstrings. Like I mentioned, like the current day Ursula, like her talking about how she's never been swimming. She hasn't touched the ocean since being banished. I was like, oh man, that's heartbreaking for, you know, a goddess of the sea. And I thought Lana had some really great moments in this one as well. I liked the twist of the illustration of the door being the actual door. I thought it felt very magical and mysterious. So that worked for me.
I also agree with Elisa that the illustration of the door being the actual door is just quirky enough to be a fun twist. And I wasn't expecting it. Because I've never seen this part of Once Upon a Time. But I do think that it's funny that in this rendition, the real Ursula and Ariel never meet. But it was an entertaining episode at least. And it was great to have Ursula's story come to a happy ending. Like, she didn't actually all that seem to be that much of a villain at all. You know what I mean?
No.
Like different, but okay. As long as it's consistent, it works for me. Although I would not have minded another episode of Young Ursula and King Poseidon because one, both are great actors. And two, when they do these backstories and wrap ups in the same episode, it does feel rushed. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you, Elisa. Ariel popping up was a delightful surprise. I really wish we could get more of her because I really like that actress. I think she's a delightful Ariel. I truly do not care at all about Robin Hood. I wish Regina had better motivation for finding the author. Like, girl, you have a great kid, a solid job, friends, good friends, a fabulous house, magic at your literal fingertips, and a hot special lady friend. What more can you want? You have your happy ending.
A smarmy unemployed loser, I guess.
Who's so wishy-washy.
He has his charms, but...
He has his charms, but then as soon as he started getting wishy-washy...
Show me where these charms are.
He really, this season, he was so awful about the Mary and Regina situation.
Mm-hmm. Shit or get off the pot, dude. I will say this. We actually did, believe it or not, luck out, because there was a deleted scene of August, like, giving wise advice to Regina.
Oh, barf. Like, he can give advice to anyone.
He's like, I want to tell you an old story that I heard in Phuket. And I'm like, oh my God, shut the fuck up.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And it was like about like working too much with Mr. Gold, and that like by the time she gets Robin Hood back, you know, she may not be like the same woman, you know, that Robin Hood fell in love with. And it's just like, I'm really glad they deleted that.
God, I tire of this bitch.
All right, let's move on to costumes.
So as previously stated, I'm obsessed with Ursula's cute little peasant outfit in the flashbacks. But I also have to give a shout out to when Poseidon comes on land at the end and he's wearing his same armor, but like needs to accessorize it with a neckerchief and like a fur coat thing to make himself like, I don't know, more casual. It was
originally they were going to put him in a purple choice. Feather boa.
No, really?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I feel robbed.
That's beautiful.
Right.
But yeah, like you said, Ursula's flashback human look is so cute. I loved it so much. And in the present day, the Queens of Mean Alliance, like, all of them definitely had themselves some iconic looks. I also really liked Belle's outfit this episode. I thought it was very sweet.
You guys already said everything I needed to say. I liked Ursula's cute little outfit too, and I knew you were going to love it, Lynn, the second I saw it, because I was like, wow, that looks very, like, traditional Snow White coated.
I
know Lynn is going to fall.
Yeah,
I definitely was like, I could make that and just wear my Snow White wig with it and be like, oh, look at me, cute historical Snow White.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, super, super cute. Oh, it's my turn. Who's that guest star? So we have Tiffany Boone as young Ursula. Baltimore native Tiffany Boone is known for her roles in the following: Complications, The Chi, Nine Perfect Strangers, and most recently, she plays Roxy Jones in Hunters. And then we have Marin Dungey, or Dungey, I don't know, so I apologize, as Ursula, present-day Ursula. Marin got her start with guest roles on shows like Murphy Brown, Living Single, Martin, and Friends, before gaining traction with larger roles on series like Summerland, Malcolm in the Middle, The King of Queens, Hollywood Heights, Big Little Lies, and Shining Veil. And then we have the man, the legend, Ernie Hudson as Poseidon. Okay, if you don't know who Ernie Hudson is, let me tell you. After 8 years of guest spots and minor film roles, Ernie quickly became a household name after co-starring as Winston Zeddemore in the original 1984 blockbuster hit Ghostbusters, one of my personal favorites. His IMDb is chock-a-block full of credits ranging from films such as The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, The Crow, Miss Congeniality, and television shows such as the revived Quantum Leap, The Family Business, Oz, Grace and Frankie, and he has also provided his voice for titles such as Infinity Train, Transformers Prime, and Pound Puppies.
Oh, right. He is the corgi on Infinity Train, isn't he?
He's somebody.
I'm going to look that up real quick. I mean, of course, obviously, I know him from Ghostbusters and tons of other things. But Infinity Train, I don't think I've ever shouted it out before. It was honestly one of the best shows I've ever seen. Cartoon is incredible.
Yeah, I really need to get on that and watch that. I have so many things on my to-watch list.
Every season has like a very different emotional feel, but gosh, it's so good. Two is my personal favorite, but all four like hit me in the heart. Yeah, Ernie is Atticus, is the corgi from the first season.
I love him.
All right, time to take a trip down once upon a timeline. Time to go fathoms below to once upon a timeline.
Okay.
Good job.
All right. So the flashback that we have seen that comes most closely before this flashback was actually Cora presenting baby Regina to the kingdom in season 2, episode 16, The Miller's Daughter. And in this episode, we have Hook and crew venturing out from Neverland and running errands for Peter Pan when he meets the young Ursula. So the flashbacks we have seen so far that most closely follow the one seen here are those from season 2, episode 15, The Queen is Dead, where Cora poisons her ex-bully and Snow White's mother, Queen Ava. All right, now it's time for our rants and raves.
Okay, so I come to you today with a book recommendation. About a week or so ago, I finished up The Halloween Moon, which is a middle grade horror novel by Joseph Fink, who is one of the writers of Night Vale. It's about a girl whose parents tell her she's too old to trick-or-treat after her 13th birthday, so she sneaks out to do it one last year, but she finds the whole town under some sort of spell that makes everyone but her and three other people fall into an enchanted sleep, because there's an entity that's trying to make sure Halloween night never ends. It's a really sweet coming-of-age story, as well as a love letter to Halloween itself, and I know I personally have a soft spot for middle-aged horror, so I was very charmed by it.
Yay, that sounds so good.
Yeah, you can read it. It's on the table. It's like right there. I'm looking at it.
What about you, Chell?
Ooh. Well, Lynn, first, I'm totally going to read Halloween Moon. Thanks for the rec. I come to you with recommendations. First, for television specifically, Why Women Kill Season 1 has Jennifer Goodwin. Did I recommend this? I swear I did. No, I don't. I think I recommended it to you guys directly.
Yeah, just never mind.
Yeah, I think it was off air.
I was like, wait, deja vu. Okay, never mind. Okay. Specifically, Why Women Kill. Season 1 has Jennifer Goodwin, and Season 2, which is an unconnected story, stars Lana Parrilla. If you like quirky period dark comedies, this show is for you. Also, if you're a fan of tabletop games, check out Toil and Troubles. It's a fast-paced, competitive, and a little addicting. You build patterned collections of cards. That's the easiest way to explain it. Beware, though, because if you get caught with a card you cannot play, your turn is done and you gain no points. And it's good for beginners and experienced game players. And I brought this to a game night once at a friend's house, and man, it just got weird and hilarious. And like petty, like in the most hilarious way. And everyone was rolling with laughter at the end of it. So highly, highly recommend. Yeah, I'll have to bring it over for you two to play one day.
Sounds good. Y'all, I just saw the Regina Mills new Fantasyland and the Magic Kingdom commercial for the first time, and it was beautiful. Please go track it down and find it if you haven't seen it, because what a delight. Well, I feel like my unofficial one is Infinity Train. Watch Infinity Train. I know it's hard to watch right now because of HBO like taking it off their app, but find a way legally to watch it, because that show is incredible. But my actual recommendation was going to be that I finished reading the last book of the Dreamer Trilogy, which was the follow-up series to one of my favorite book series, The Raven Cycle. And the Dreamer Trilogy tells the story of the brothers Lynch, or actually it's the story of the full Lynch family. And overall, I really enjoyed it. I was just so happy to spend more time with characters I love so dearly. And I love me some Brothers Lynch.
Next time on Once Upon a Rewatch, Cook tells Emma that her fate is at stake in Gold's plan, while Regina leads the villains on a wild goose chase. Henry makes a breakthrough in his search to find the author, but Mary Margaret and David need a moment to reconsider the best course of action. In the Enchanted Forest of the Past, Snow and Charming search for a way to ensure their child will grow up to be a hero. Thank you for tuning in to Once Upon a Rewatch. We are the Narrators 3. The moral of this episode is, of all the characters in all the fairy tales, why did it have to be August?
Visit us at Spotify for Podcasters to answer episodic questions, send us voice messages, or to find out other ways you can help support the podcast. You can find our page at podcasters.spotify.com/pod/show/Once Upon a Rewatch.
If you enjoy Once Upon a Rewatch, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or on your platform of choice.
Talk fairy tales with us on Instagram at Once Upon Rewatch.
On Tumblr at onceuponarewatch.tumblr.com.
The artwork for our podcast was by Lychee Ruru.
We want to say a very special thank you to the master of free music, Kevin McLeod. Our intro music is Frost Waltz, and our outro music is Fairy Tale Waltz.
This podcast uses material from episode-specific pages on the Once Upon a Time wiki at Fandom and is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license.
And remember, all plot devices come with a price.
One of our cats just did something loud, and I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
That's a problem for future me.
It's not Merlin. She is just climbing around on the shelf behind me.
Well, it's not Luke, so it's either Salem or Noah.
Salem just wandered into the kitchen like doop 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 doop.
So it's probably Salem.
I was gonna say, not the bear.
No, I didn't even figure it'd be Noah. He has too good of manners.
Wonder what Salem tried to get.
Oh, who knows?